SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday. Fonner Park, force out, pick five, carryover players, Tom Dinsdale Automotive. This is it. What you've been waiting for. Well, at least since it was announced on what, Saturday? Friday afternoon. Fonner Park, folks. And you're going to learn more today about Fonner. And I guess about Tom Dinsdale, too. Who has gotten more publicity out of this sponsorship? I'm sure when they signed on to be the title of the jackpot pick five at Fonner this winter, they couldn't imagine that they'd be selling cars nationwide like this. I don't even know what kind of a dealer it is. I'm not even sure. They've got to look it up. I'm not even sure what... What nameplates Tom Dinsdale sells. We got to get Tom Dinsdale on the show, right? We are going to have Nick Tamaro here in the first hour. We're going to start out right away and look at this sequence. It's a really fun sequence. It's a 50-cent bet. And yesterday, of course, it carried. We didn't have to worry about a... a scoop up the day before to take this fun away, and we'll take our fun in any way, shape, or form, won't we? The jackpot swelled to $497,810. You gotta figure it's Tuesday. Will Rogers, and I didn't actually look at the chart as to, but they must have actually bet plenty into it yesterday. Let me glance at that, because the thing really did take a leap yesterday. And as a result, you gotta figure there'll be I'm gonna say $3 million, and they bet $355,000 in yesterday. Unbelievable. Just amazing. And so with a $500,000 carryover, I'm going to guess six times, right? Got to be. This should hit $3 million. Who knows? I mean, it may be way more. The sequence itself, what's nice about it, there's a couple of places where you probably latched onto a horse or two where you could maybe tiptoe through the sequence. The most harrowing part of it is going to be that nightcap, where I think Gon Preachin should be super tough. I'm ready to single Gon Preachin in the nightcap so that I can spread, notably in the sixth, which is very tough. The sequence are mostly conditional nickel claimers with, various tie-ons. It opens up three and ups, six furlongs, and, of course, bull ring configuration. Three and ups, which have never won three races, or Nebraska breds, which have never won four. But there's no Nebraska breds in this spot. So everybody in here is in for a nickel. And everybody looking for win number three. That starts it out, and I think there's a couple of horses, maybe three, four that you're going to have to use. Second leg is similar, three and ups, which have never won three, or Nebraska breds again. And once again, you don't have to worry about Nebraska breds having had an extra win. These are all horses that are looking for win number three. And there's a couple in here that seem a little more likely than others. A little, you know, what you're looking for. This is so old fashioned. It's funny. It came up with that Ed Fontaine column in the New York Post. You know, old fashioned. You know, Ainsley's guide to thoroughbred racing style conditions, where, you know, horses that, you know, that are dropping down, you know, very subtly, and, you know, certainly Getaway Driver, for instance, seems to me to be a pretty clear drop down with one of the better riders, the best rider maybe at Fawner, Jake Oleziak. And third leg is a starter allowance. And here again, you got some interesting class maneuvering going on, and you got some strong trainer stats to consider, including Issei Gonzalez, who has got Ship Stalker coming back on a week, and that's a good category. Very strong on short rest is Gonzalez, but there's a couple of horses in here that are, including his other horse, frankly, Hunter's Appeal, that lures and keeps Oleziak. This is six furlongs, three and ups, which have started for a claiming price of a nickel. The feature is an optional claimer for 10,000, non-winners of four lifetime. That third leg, by the way, is 6.5 furlongs. This is six furlongs, and it enters in. I mean, you don't really, you know, they're all very similar, but it's important in that seventh race, the feature, because Honey Hearts, Gonzalez again, it happens that this horse is a 5-2 favorite that doesn't really go beyond five furlongs. It's a Gone Astray mare that is just better going shorter, and it just doesn't seem, you know, with some other speed, with some other pressure, that six furlongs is, she's only tried it once, but boy, she really looks like a five, five and a half type. And in fact, Cheryl Weinbaugh had her going back to last year at Arlington, and she turf sprinted a number of times. And then Joel Berndt had her at Delta before Gonzalez got his hands on her. She's the 5-2 favorite, and I didn't like her at all. So that's the feature, and I thought there was a couple of horses, including May Flowers, who is 9-2. I don't think that'll hold. There's extreme caution in here for Stetson Rushton. By the way, there's so many great names, like straight out of Central Casting. In fact, this race has got both of the Stetsons on the circuit, because Stetson Mitchell. Has got Indian Roses, who actually might be circling around to a third off the layoff, might be circling around to an okay performance. So pick your Stetson. Pick yourself out a good one. Stetson Rushton and Stetson Mitchell. This is American Heartland Racing. And then the nightcap, as I mentioned, we got a 2,500 three and ups that have not won two in 2019 or 2020. And that, of course, can be an interesting condition. You might have a horse that missed the swath of the year and is in, you know, better form. The Gone Preaching is, you know, a horse that has faced better and just feels like a very strong player in here. The four, Gone Preaching and Mark Hibden. There's also some fun things. I can't wait to talk to Nick. He'll be with us in six, seven, 8 minutes. And there's some skull busting track abbreviations that you're going to encounter if you're going to be looking at this for the first time. And most of them are Nebraska circuit. You know, the Nebraska circuit goes from Fawner to Horseman's Park in Omaha, which is HPO when you see it. And then they go to Columbus, Nebraska, CLS. When you see CLS, that's Columbus. Then they go to Lincoln, the state fair in June. And you'll see Lincoln, L, little N, big N. So it's a potpourri. There's horses from all over the place too, which makes it kind of engaging, and it's stuff a lot of you are going to be looking at undoubtedly for the first time. You might come across GRP. Huh? John White will be on later. John knows what GRP is. Grants Pass in Oregon. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. It was a lot of fun going through this. That nightcap, there aren't that many opportunities to look at races that have Iowa breds, Washington breds, Arkansas breds, Oklahoma, Texas, Idaho, Virginia, and a Venezuelan thrown in for good measure. That's a potpourri. So we're excited. Fonner Park is the focus today. Tomorrow it'll be Tampa. Tampa's got a pick five carryover themselves from the weekend. So that'll be heavily played and scrutinized. It's easy to pick your poison under these circumstances, right? You know exactly what to look at. We got a very fun morning. And yesterday, by the way, I want to thank everybody particularly Evan Hammonds and Ed Fontaine, and of course, for a lot of people, getting a chance to hear Ed for the first time in ages, and I literally grew up, reading Ed Fontaine stuff, and then, as I told him, getting to know him and spending the time I got to spend with him and Steve Askin, particularly those years early on covering Derby. That was really special, but it was fun. We're not gonna do the journalist innovations today, but the next one we'll talk about is the Racing Times, undoubtedly, and the head spinning roster that Steve Crist assembled, the Racing Times. That'll be our next conversation. Today, beside Nick Tamaro joining us after the first break to look at Fonner, Kent Sweezy, as promised, and Kent will tell you not only did he get those three wins on Friday at Tampa and then another one on Saturday, he went fishing yesterday and sent me a fabulous picture of a hook through his palm. You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Sweezy. I'm not going to put that picture on Twitter because you'll be horrified. But we'll talk to Kent. John White, as mentioned. Jen Shaw is going to join us midway today. And Jen Shaw, who was part of that presentation last week, the teleconference, and looking forward to a visit from Jen. And she is going to, as we did partially a little bit yesterday with Joe Applebaum, and Jen was part of the presentation to Horsemen in New York yesterday. But Jen also part of the teleconference representing Dean Dorton, who consults to the NTRA. And so, again, today, we're going to go through with Jen. She'll walk you through the application process for the federal funds available to farms, to trainers, to all kinds of equine business interests. Andy Serling, hour three today. Check in with Andy as well. What else? I think we'll also have one more, like an extra tail end of the day visit for Fonner. We'll do a final Fonner. By that time, the scratches should be out. All right, so we should be able to get one more 11th hour. Actually, the scratches may not be out because they do start fairly late, right? What time do they? 3 o'clock? No. 4 o'clock Central is first post, so 5 o'clock Eastern. So you do have plenty of time. And for those of you that are working and actually can't you know, mid-afternoon, the first leg of the pick five goes off at 5:21 Central, so 6:21 Eastern. So it's a fun Tuesday night of action. We used to have Tampa Tuesday. This is Fonner Tuesday. 6:21 first post, then 6:48, 7:15, 7:42, and 8:09. So block out the afternoon for your swing. I've put together a $60 play pre-scratches, so we'll see. And we'll find out. We'll find out from Chris Katulak when scratches come out. All right. And I'll see him. I don't know, Gus. I know Gus looked at Will Rogers yesterday, but I'm not sure. I'm going to guess that Gus will put a play together too, so you can look at both of ours and get your pens and paper ready, because Nick Tamaro is going to lay out his approach to this. And actually, I want to ask Nick if Nick may do the buyers for Fonner. You know, Nick does a lot of the B and C tracks working for Buyer Associates. All right. So there it is. Otherwise, what else we got? Looking forward toward Tampa tomorrow. And we should get a better feel by today into tomorrow what those fields are shaping up, how they're shaping up at Oaklawn, which is the highlight on Saturday with the Oaklawn Mile, which is going to feature Times the Tot and the three-year-old prep for the Arkansas Derby, the Oaklawn Stakes. And Mary Rampolini wrote about it yesterday. It looks like Asmussen is going to send Basin, Gold Street, and Shoplifted. And Brad Cox has got Shared Sense and Something Natural. So at least five of them between those two. And then flesh it out with some other three-year-olds that are have been rumored. Get that locked in. Asmussen, by the way, has gone so cold at Oaklawn, it's shocking. In fact, there's a piece right there from Mary. Oh, for his last 43. Yeah. He's got a couple that's going to run Thursday to try to snap it, but wow. Not usual. Let's take a break. We're just getting going. Going to be a fun Tuesday, and Nick Tamaro visits first.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University.
Acoustic of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 20 minutes into Tuesday, and the hot topic absolutely is the Dinsdale Automotive Jackpot Pick 5 at Fauner Park. And I've looked it up, and an auto group after my own heart. It's a Chevy dealership, and my 2019 Impala out in the driveway. And so very happy, GMC trucks as well. And I feel obligated to give Dinsdale as much advertising as possible. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I feel like they're certainly deserving. I was going to ask, funny that you brought it up. I was going to ask you what kind of cars they sell, but that you went ahead and answered it, and now we all know, and we're ready to rock and roll. I mean, look, we didn't really plan on the Tuesday, the first Tuesday of April, the conversation centering on Fauner and their Pick 5 force out. But the way things have gone lately, we'll take it.
Well, and I've got a couple of feelers out, too, to get either Chris Katulek back or maybe Bob Hamer from the Grand Isle Independent, who covers Fauner. And, you know, it's a bull ring. And I was curious, as I was looking at figs for these races, Nick, do you do the buyers for Fauner?
I did. I don't do them now. I did them in 16, 17, and 18. So this is the second year I'm not doing them. I'm not actually sure who does them. I believe Bob Weir does them. But the interesting thing, of course, I can speak about them a little bit, which, as I'm sure anybody who's looked at these races has noticed, is that all of these races are hand-timed. So that's part of the reason why, if you're a Timeform US user, there are not any internal pace figures for any of the races at Fauner. And in fact, Craig Mulkowski doesn't even produce figures for the 4 furlong races. And it's kind of tough to produce a pace figure for a 4 furlong race. I mean, they're just really, really getting their engine cranked by the time the wire comes up. And I'll admit, watching some replays for these races, it brought me back to the first racetrack that I regularly handicapped that I attended was Trinity Meadows. And it was a 6 furlong track out in Willow Park, Texas, a little west of Fort Worth. And so I have no issues with a 1 furlong stretch and the necessity of getting down towards the inside, the difficulty of an outside post, and what a 2-turn 6 furlong race looks like. So this was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you what, it's a really good sequence from a competitive
yes.
Wagering standpoint.
Exactly. And, you know what, one of the things people are getting familiar listening to the calls, that's Steve Anderson. And it's the funniest thing because I have Steve Anderson and then I've got Steve Anderson in my phone numbers. And so very frequently when I go to text Steve Anderson in California, from the forum. Steve Anderson, who calls the races, will write back and say, "Steve, it's Steve in Nebraska." And I, so it makes me laugh every time I, you know, I hear Steve Anderson. And this sequence, I gave a quick rundown of it earlier, Nick. Mostly 6 furlongs. There is that sixth race, which is a very tricky starter allowance that is 6.5. And for the most part, the distance you wouldn't think enters into it all that much. But one thing that should be, as you just kind of alluded, some of the favorites that are outposted, including when we get to the nightcap, Born Force from the 9 hole, being outposted is no favor here. And it absolutely is worth noting. And we'll start in this fourth race that kicks it off, because Otani is going to get plenty of attention from the 9 hole, though. And I remember Otani debuting in California. This is the first leg, and felt to me like there were 5 horses, the 5 through the 9. The winner is going to come from somewhere there.
Yeah, it did feel like Otani was in kind of a rough spot, being drawn out in the 9, and there being probably at least a couple of horses that could show some speed to his inside. And I think that would be, it would behoove you at least to entertain some alternatives to Otani. I like Cliff's Place, who's going back to the claiming ranks off of a 3-lifetime allowance, where he actually got bet down to 4-1, in large part because his 2-lifetime win, 2 back in the claiming ranks, was huge. And he didn't have a particularly bad trip in his last start. He just seemed to run into a field that was a little too good for him. And I think that while you probably don't see a lot of, I think the class lines blur maybe between a 2-life 5,000 claimer and a 5,000 beaten claimer, where a lot of those horses are just 3 lives or have a time restriction. You do see a big disparity between the horses running in a 5,000 claimer and an $8,000 allowance race, even if it has a 3-life restriction as well. So it feels like Cliff's Place is taking a pretty substantial drop in class. And one of the things I think that he has going for him is that he has some speed. He's reunited with the jockey who won 2 back, and I think that's another positive sign. Chili Willis, just to his inside, is a horse that has shown speed in the past and now is back in the barn that he, I guess, occasionally winters with, even though it lingered all the way into the summer last year. And he didn't really have a great deal of success, but he's come back from a long respite and actually run, I think, 2 encouraging races in a row. And in watching the replay of his most recent start, he was really moving late at 4 furlongs. It's obviously tricky to assume that a horse that's running late in a 1-turn 4-furlong event is going to be just as effective going 2 turns at 6 furlongs. But I think he's a horse that might have some sneaky back form that makes him competitive. And I think you just want as many alternatives to Otani as possible. I agree with you that DeVan Gogh and Where's Rufus are both logical alternatives. So, yeah, I felt like I'm on the same page. I think the winner comes from the 5 through 9. And I think the horses that I'm going to mainly focus on will probably be the 5 and 6 along with Otani.
And I agree, and I also included, I think I picked Where's Rufus, I think I put on top, and yeah, I went 7, 6, 5, 9, and then 8 would be, you know, if you wanted to go 5 deep, but depending on your budget, and we'll get back to budgetary considerations, after we go through the 5 races, but I do agree about Cliff's Place, and certainly that race 2 back, it towers over this group. I mean, if he runs back to that, he'll be tough to beat.
I agree, and if his jockey just treats this as a race to the first turn, then it might be really all he needs. Because if he gets the lead kind of clear, which I think is a real possibility, then he's going to be very, very dangerous.
Well, and we'll see how Jake Olesiak, who's one of the top riders, out there. We'll see what he does with Otani, and he may scoot and boot. But, you know, inside of him, in between Where's Rufus, who did get to the lead in a tougher spot last time, Da Van Gogh, and kind of interesting owner-trainer E.D. Nelson, and 1 for 23, but adds the blinkers and utilizes the 5-pound bug. There may be a little bit of a scramble from the outside, that group might be 3 wide, going into the turn. So this thing could get, that's, I think, the you know, the variable in here, and that frankly would benefit Chili Willis. And I did wonder if Chili Willis was originally named after the great character actor Chill Wills from way back. Been around it, for those of you that are old film buffs, Jay Hubdy raising his hand. Chill Wills must have been in a 300 movies. Let's go to the second leg, and this group it was interesting because I think I want to tiptoe through here, Nick, with maybe just a couple of players, and you know, again, looking for subtle class drops. Getaway Driver. 6-1, the Regal Ransom gelding for Marissa Black gets Elysiac. And I thought Spotitude was a serious player in here at a nice price.
Yeah, these were my two interesting horses. I thought Spotitude, a little bit like the horse in the prior race we were discussing, is one that ran well two back and maybe had a slightly poorer performance last time. But Spotitude's a horse that needs to sprint. And I think the cutback in distance will help quite a bit. That mile, obviously, is a three-turn race. And he was never really in an ideal position. He was a little wide on multiple occasions. And obviously, as we've talked about, losing ground on a bull ring, especially a 5/8 bull ring, is just a death sentence. So you don't really have much of a chance if that occurs. So I thought Spotitude was a major player. Getaway Driver is finally probably in the most realistic spot class-wise he's been in his entire career. This is a horse that showed potential early on, and so he's been regularly facing allowance company, and clearly last time something happened down the back stretch. He was eased by his jockey about halfway through and now comes back dropping in class. Obviously not the most encouraging sign, but I do think that this barn does a good job, and he's spotted right now where he can be most effective. So I think that this race boils down to how much you trust those two and how much you want to dabble in El Diablo Grande, who obviously has speed and is drawn favorably towards the inside, but has developed quite a bit of camera shyness and seems like he might actually be going a little bit backwards since he got to this high percentage barn. So, you know, you're going to take probably 5-2, 2-1 on a horse that chased the pace and had no excuse last time and ended up beating a 23-1 shot by a half a length that he's going to be a fraction of the price of again today. So I thought that depending on how your budget, what it looks like and how much you want to go in some of these other legs, I felt like this might be a situation where you would use a horse like El Diablo Grande as a backup. Panic Button on the outside is another horse who I think will be dangerous. The issue, of course, with him is that he's kind of a one-run closer and yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to make a lot of money betting these types in a 5/8 bull ring. So I think he, obviously, if there's a little bit of pace, if it materializes, he'll be a threat. He's clearly on his way back after a long break and a poor return against tougher company. His last two races have been much improved. So I felt like you could make a case for including him as well.
That's exactly the four that I used. I've got 6-4, 2-9, Spotitude, Getaway Driver, El Diablo Grande, and Panic Button. And, you know, the problem with Panic Button, in addition to, you know, having to come from off the pace, I don't like the fact that Elysiac, who rode him, you know, to a win and a placement in his last two, abandons Panic Button in favor of Marissa Black and Getaway Driver. And in fact, Black and Elysiac are 4-10 the last couple of years with a positive ROI. So I'm not a big follow the jock kind of a player, but a circuit like this and a situation like this, I think it means something.
I agree. I think it matters. And I think it's a factor when you talk about the success they've had and the fact that he's been aboard this horse when he's won in both of the two victories, and that he probably had something to do with why Panic Button improved in his most two recent starts.
Let's go to the middle leg. It's the starter allowance, and in a lot of ways, this may be the toughest race in the sequence, and there's a lot going on in here. There's some horses coming in from another circuit, Chuckmate on the rail. You know, then you've got a strong trainer angle play that I see that Marcus Hirsch actually pointed out as well in his analysis. Shipstalker and Issei Gonzalez coming back on a week's rest. The guy's like 7-15.
Yeah, he's actually to some extent, has been a Texas guy in the past, and I realized in looking at these PPs, I will admit I had not looked at Fonder PPs much before the last couple of weeks, but that he's got a really high percentage at Fonder, and this is a horse that clearly fits what he was trying to do, which is claim horses down south and bring them up there that could be effective probably at slightly higher class levels. And Shipstalker's exactly that, having been taken for 4,000 to then come back and win in a four-lifetime optional claimer, obviously in for the tag, and now he's protected in a 5,000 starter allowance. And so, I mean, you know, I think primarily the conversation boils down to he and Shooter's Alley. Shooter's Alley's obviously been in very good form since joining Kelly Martinez's barn, ran a good race in the race from which he was claimed off of Isai Gonzalez. And Martinez clearly does a very good job at Fonner, 35% on the meet, and does particularly well, clearly, I think, with speed horses. So and this is a horse that fit what she was trying to do and looks like the controlling speed, I think, again, in here. It's just going to be a matter with the slightly elongated run to the first turn. If Armando Martinez wants to push this horse all the way to try and get the leader, if he's happy to stalk potentially outside of horses like Smarty Party Papa or potentially Commander McDivitt, given that he has effectively stalked in the past, I think that makes him very, very dangerous. I think he's the horse to beat. I think Shipstalker is as well one of the two that you really want to use. I thought an interesting horse in here that you want to find a way onto your ticket at a price is Chuckmate. And my thought process behind that is that this horse moves to the barn of Salvador Arceo, who is 33% in the last couple of years with new arrivals to his barn. He's having a very, very good meet at 32%. Look back at some of this horse's dirt races. Now, this might be a classic, old-fashioned, cross-out the synthetic form. And if you do that, I think what you're left with is a situation where this horse is drawn perfectly. He's going to be able to save ground all the way around there. It's obviously a positive barn change. And those last two workouts sort of look like the light bulb may have gone off. So Chuckmate felt like a horse that you could find a way onto your ticket. And if he ends up getting it done, he could be 8 or 10 to 1. And that's certainly going to juice this thing up quite a bit.
I agree. And what's funny, I tried in my initial ticket building exercise to get away with just Shipstalker and Shooter's Alley. However, Hunter's Appeal and Commander McDivitt were you know, just within range, and either one of them feel like, with, you know, even slight improvement and trips, both 6 to 1, that either of them could upset. And then I also noticed that Ducati for Skylar Condon, who can win, Ducati scratched yesterday for this spot, and that always raises an eyebrow. And then Chuckmate for all the reasons you just laid out. So when it came down to it, I ended up using 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, it's that kind of race. I think you. I had looked at the last two legs first. I went backwards. And I got to this race and I thought, well, boy, I really hope there's somebody that you can kind of latch on to. And in looking through the field at first, I thought it was Shooter's Alley as I worked from the outside in and realized, no, that's not the case. There are actually quite a few contenders. And as much as I think a weary handicapper would like to just concede the race to a horse like Shooter's Alley, it's just not the prudent thing to do.
Agreed, and especially because, you know, for this thing to pay, I mean, it's going to pay. In fact, let's get a guess from you. What is this going to handle?
I mean, I would imagine probably a million plus.
Yeah, no, I think more.
Yeah, a million and a half probably. I mean, it's definitely bringing a lot of people who have probably never even heard of Fonner into the mix. You know, for example, the Will Rogers put in a new pick five yesterday, and it handled $188,000 the first time it was offered. So, you know, it's like a bonanza of what's going on. And it's funny, you think about a year from now, and these tracks are going to be sitting down looking at making projections and budgetary things. They're going to think, geez, we handled $3.6 million last year? You know, some of the numbers that Will Rogers come up with are just crazy. But, yeah, I mean, I would imagine, I think, and I mean, I'm talking money on top of the carryover. The carryover is $500,000. So I think the pool's going to be in excess of $2 million. So
I think it's going to be close to three, Nick. I think it's going to go.
Yeah, I think it being a little later in the day will probably help. I think that more of our friends on the West Coast may be getting involved, and everybody else will be tied on from a little earlier. So, yeah, I mean, right now these days on Mondays and Tuesdays, it's Will Rogers Fonner in Australia. So this is the racetrack that bridges the gap.
Well, and speaking of Australia, tomorrow, Andrew N.J. Hawkins returns to At the Races, and Andrew will start to give you some ideas. And unbelievable. Andrew's been on a phenomenal run, which included a big score at Hong Kong, and he also gave out Natoye in the Doncaster Mile on Friday night. At 100-1, unbelievable. So Andrew, who used to do the Hong Kong analysis for us, going back about 3 years, and he was going to join us today, but his mother took sick, not COVID related, but so he begged off for tomorrow. So we'll start to give you some Australia ideas as well. And as I mentioned yesterday, while you're thumbing through your on-demand video, watch Ride Like a Girl, the Michelle Payne story, and her win, her big upset 100-1 win on Prince of Penzance in the Melbourne Cup. Really good with Sam Neill and some other familiar faces. Let's talk about the feature. It's a optional claimer, 10,000 non-winners of four lifetime. And here's where distance does factor in, Nick, because Honey Hearts is 5-2 on the line for Gonzalez, and she doesn't want to go a step past 5.5.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it. Boy, if she didn't have these distance limitations, she would be the horse I think that you were searching for in the entire sequence, because she's drawn perfectly. She has a little bit of an excuse from last time. She should be on the lead. But as you said, I mean, this 6 furlongs, that last furlong when they turn for home could get really dicey for her. And otherwise, I think she'll have to try and work out a pretty soft lead, which I don't know how much that's going to happen. And so, of course, that opens the door for the alternatives, which to me, the best of them was Extreme Caution, who's just immediately outside of Honey Hearts. The problem, of course, being with Extreme Caution is that it's been quite a bit of time since she's won. And that's something that's true of a lot of these horses. There aren't a lot of winning types in here. And I think that was what sort of drew you to Honey Hearts from the beginning. And then, I suppose to an extent, Mayflower, she's coming off a big win, 7,500 claimer. This is a horse actually that reminds me, I recognized the name and I went back and realized she broke her maiden on the turf sprinting at Saratoga for Jeremiah Englehart.
Mm-hmm.
Quite some time ago, and actually looks like a pretty nice horse. But she feels like the type that's going to sit a little bit off of it and make one run similar to what she did last time, and that might be enough to make her a threat. And then going all the way to the outside to Chubb's Charmer, she's coming out of a Nebraska bred race where she did make up good late ground after getting off to a slow start, but this competition feels like it's quite a bit tougher. So, you know, it's just a matter of how much you trust Honey Hearts. I don't think that you can really trust her, and I think you're going to need alternatives, and for me, Extreme Caution seems like the best of them.
I went Mayflowers, Extreme Caution, Chubb's Charmer, and then I threw in a horse that seems to be rounding into form, and third off the layoff, here's Stetson Mitchell, with Indy and Roses. And Indy and Roses has kept better company if you go back to the 13 starts that she made last year, and that was at Arapahoe and Remington. And I thought that third off the layoff, she's a little dirtied up in here, Nick.
Yeah, I could see that. It does look like some of her better races now have slid down the running lines, and that's okay. Certainly getting back to a class level, I think, where she's been effective. And, I mean, look, being competitive and running high 50s, low 60 buyers for 10,000 at Remington certainly puts her in the mix, squarely in the mix in a race like this. So it is one of the things I think is part of the exercise in handicapping this kind of race is that you really do need to read between the lines, and it's not like you're seeing a lot of the stuff you generally do from, you know, a larger type of circuit. And these are horses that generally do go in and out of form very quickly. And it looks like if you can pick up a little bit ahead of time on one that might be rounding back into form, that's where you can really make money.
Exactly. And I got to ask about 10-1 River Deputy on the rail, who made a trip down to Will Rogers and had her head handed to her, and now comes back essentially to run the same race she won two back.
Yeah, didn't have things go her way last time, but clearly the competition here is weaker. And look, I mean, Honey Hearts is probably her best friend in this field, and that she's going to set the pace and the quicker they go, the better it'll work out for River Deputy, who figures to just kind of suck along on the rail. And seems like a horse that if you're going the ABC route, you probably want to have in there as a B or a C, just to safeguard against things getting a little chaotic on the front end, because certainly she's another one who's run races that are good enough to get the job done here. I mean, if you look at that buyer par 57, there are a lot of horses in here that are capable of running that, or that are running it on a somewhat regular basis, and that just shows you how really you can throw a blanket over a lot of them and find the winner. So it's which you should be able to find the winner if you throw a blanket over a lot of them. It's just that a lot of them are very evenly matched, and there isn't a whole lot differentiating them from others.
Well, and, you know, there, I guess another marginal contender is the 7-star Hunter, who is, you know, placing quite regularly. And in fact, last six starts has been, you know, no worse than third, and got 5 seconds and a third in her last six. This is a trap shot 5-year-old mare. But, you know, eventually I kind of shunted her down toward sea level. Let's get to the nightcap, where I think, Nick, there's potentially a let me just answer Ken Sweezy. Yes, shortly. Okay. Nick, let's get to this nightcap and 2,500. Not horses that have not won two in 2019, 2020. And I don't know if you noticed the variety of points of origin, but there's an Iowa bred Washington, 3 Arkies, an Oklahoma, a Texas, an Idaho, a Virginia, and a Venezuelan.
You know, it really brings together what you would think is the equine version of the melting pot that that we are here in America. So good to see everybody be brought together. And yes, cannot forget the Venezuelan bread on the far outside. I did not notice that, but I did as you were bringing it up, and did see an Idaho bread in there as well, which you don't get very much. And I'm glad that they're still participating now that Lebois Park is defunct.
Well, the horse in here, there's two things. Born Force is the 5-2 favorite and is going to have to work out a trip from the outside, and is also going to need a pace to chase. The horse that I think could be heavily leaned on here is the 4, Gone Preaching.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the problem is he's won for his last 25. Clearly he's found a way to lose on a number of occasions, but I mean, class-wise, he's a great fit. This is a gigantic class drop coming out of Starter Allowance Company, and I mean, take a look at this horse's PPs, then go back to the 6th race, look at Shooter's Alley, and then come back to this race, and what you'll understand in looking at that is that, I mean, the quality of competition this horse has been facing, it's in a different universe than what he faces in here, and being a little bit more towards the inside, I think that'll make a huge difference for him. So I agree. I thought he was, other than the proverbial camera shyness, I think he's clearly the horse to beat, and I think that at 4-1 he actually becomes a horse that you might even want to consider making an intra-race bet on, because I think there are a lot of people who will be scared off by the fact that he is collecting a lot of in-the-money finishes but not a whole lot of victories. Born Force is the horse to beat, as you said, but obviously, all of the things that he's up against factor in the outside post, his inability to really get too close to the pace. These are things that work against you in a 2-turn, 6-furlong race. And even if he was drawn in the 2 or 3, I think we'd be trying to find a way to bet against him a little bit. But being in the 9, that certainly makes it the proper approach, I'd say. So, yeah, I'm gonna lean on Gone Preaching to an extent. I thought Frankly Fun, there was a little bit of a case that could be made for him. He didn't really save any ground last time, got really good back form, and this is a horse I think that'll be somewhat forwardly placed. And I think if ridden properly, he actually could find his way in the early lead, which would, I think, would make him very dangerous. There's not a whole lot of confirmed speed, and some of these races I think are going to be both interesting and fun and somewhat enervating in that you don't know who's going to the lead. And this seems like a horse that could get, I don't know if he can get loose. I think Komo Sayama may keep him from being able to do that, but he'll at least be forwardly placed. He's going to be a good price, and I'd certainly like to get alive to, if I can get alive to the 3, 4, and 9 in here, I'll be happy.
Well, I went 4-9, 10-3, and I'll tinker with the ticket after scratches. Nick, let's build tickets here, and let's lay out either a grid or however you want to suggest the approach.
I mean, I think as far as the first leg goes, it's really as wide as you want to be. It's as wide as you can afford being. I mean, for me in there, I'm going to have my A's are going to be 5, 6, 9, and I would back up with 7 and 8. And then in the fifth race, this is a situation where I'll probably try and be a little bit more aggressive in terms of narrowing things down. And I'm going to use the 4 and 6 as A's and the 2, 3, 9 as backups.
That's very, yeah. That's
and then in the sixth race, obviously, this is where we wanted to be able to lean on the two main players, the 5 and 7. But I'm going to go 1, 5, 7 as A's. And back up with really the rest of the logicals in the field, which to me looks like 2, 3, 4, 6. And then seventh race, where we talked about Honey Heart's inability to probably get this distance. I think your A's are 2, 3, 5. And I mean, I'm going to back up with 6, 7, 8. And then the nightcap, like I said, if I can get a life to 3, 4, 9, I'll be happy. Back up with the 10, probably the 5 as well.
Very good. So for those that want to keep a simple A ticket, Nick's A ticket, 5, 6, 9 with 4, 6 with 1, 5, 7 with 2, 3, 5 with 3, 4, 9. So 27, 54, 150, 162. So an $81 play on the All A's.
There you go.
Ryan?
That's right. Exactly. Right.
Okay. Beautiful. And then, you know, depending on your budget. And, I mean, this thing is certainly approachable. And even if you're, you know, if you've got a small budget, you know, there's a couple of different spots, maybe, you know, maybe gone preaching as I the way I wrote up this morning, and I may adjust it a little bit after scratches, but there is spots where you could, you know, narrow down and lower the, you know, the ticket, but you should make a play in here. This is one of those opportunities. And of course we'll all wait for Marshall Graham to officially decipher how big of a player bonus this is.
He will certainly have it ready. I can imagine that within minutes of the first race leaving the of the fourth race leaving the gate, he'll have the info on there. And I would imagine you're going to see a pretty hearty player's edge, given the size of this carryover and the fact that the carryover money should be probably a quarter to maybe at the very least 20% of the pool. I think you're looking at. I mean, at that point, I don't know what the actual takeout is on this, but at that point, you're looking at least some positive expectation.
Well, and the one surprise is that that he didn't manage to get a 10 strike horse sent up somehow to to level the playing field for his own bets.
He has a former 10 strike horse, a horse that was claimed off of him last year. I noticed that. I was going to send him a text and give him a hard time. But yeah, I think you never know. Fawner might be a new horizon. I think Marshall, along with a lot of other owners right now, actually Shipstalker is a former 10 strike that was claimed off of him.
How about that?
Last year.
There you go.
Yeah, I think Marshall, like a lot of other owners, is looking for any places to open right now. So you never know.
And then tomorrow, Nick, before we wrap up, tomorrow, pick 5 carryover at Tampa Bay.
Well, you know what, Steve? If you want to have me back 24 hours from now, I can't think of anything I'd rather do.
Look at that. All right. So we'll do the Tampa sequence. Have you given it an early glance? I mean, they're all full fields.
I glanced, the fields are big. Oh, yeah, the fields are big. I mean, Tampa's gone this route they've taken with the 8 race cards. They've gotten big fields, and you know, they're preserving the purse account a little bit. But, yeah, no, it looks like a good sequence. Some good competitive turf races. And I've just glanced at it, not really done a whole lot of work, but it certainly does seem like a lot of fun. And I think we'll, you know, hopefully make a little money today in Nebraska and be able to boom, transition it right into Tampa play tomorrow.
we're not messing around. Tomorrow, 10 by 12 by 10 by 11 by 10 at Tampa in this pick 5 carryover. Holy cow. A 6-figure carryover there, too. So that'll have our attention. Nick, this was great. Thanks so much, and good luck, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Good luck to you and everybody.
Nick Tamaro, folks. NTAMM. 1215. So good. So good. And it seems like he and I are pretty much, we're kind of in harmony here. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Kent Sweezy is going to join us. We'll check in with Kent. We'll see how his hand is after he put a fish hook through it. yesterday. John White ahead. Jen Shah is going to join us from Dean Dorton and go over again for horsemen nationwide, for commercial breeders, for forwarding farms, for anybody that is in the business, in the industry. Jen is going to lay out the available monies and how to approach them. So look forward to that. Andy Serling as well on this Tuesday. Beautiful sunny morning here in upstate New York. Hope wherever you are, you're safe and okay. Family and friends and quarantine life 2020. Back after this, Ken Sweezy joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start. DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, coming up toward the top of the hour. John White will join us next. Right now, Kent Sweezy visiting, and reached out to Kent after a tremendous week last week at Tampa. Three wins on Friday, came back with a fourth win on Saturday. Now, looking ahead to tomorrow and that pick five carryover, Kent may be instrumental because he's got a horse in the first leg. And he's got a horse in the anchor leg, so we'll get some insights on that. But first of all, We have to check on his hand because you go fishing yesterday, Kent, and the first thing you do is you caught your palm pretty neatly with a hook. That was quite horrifying.